You're listening to Rambling Business, the only multimedia podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about striking gold in Julian, California. We finish our Julian, California business series by going back to its beginning, the Julian Gold Rush, the reason for this town existed.
Like about 100 other towns in California.
Yeah, exactly. We have a lot of towns that started gold, silver mining too.
Right.
Here, Rick and Judy walk to the Eagle Gold Mine and trace the ore car tracks deep into the mountain where others struck it rich so many years ago. Learn about the history of the Eagle Mining Company and what the third generation, Paul and Craig Nelson, are doing to preserve that legacy. Stay tuned, of course, for our tax tales and business takeaways coming up.
When people talk about the California Gold Rush, the two things that come to mind are the year 1849,
mm-hmm.
the 49ers.
Yeah, the sourdoughs.
That's right. Well, you know, the 49ers is that they only remember that because of the football players,
mm-hmm.
but they really probably don't even connect it with the gold rush.
But the football team is named
right.
after the year that the gold miners.
And Sutter's Mill, mm-hmm. right, which is on the western side of Sierras, and a lot of people don't connect that with gold because they think of Sutter's Home, which makes wine.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. We don't have a very historical state. We have a lot of history, but not a lot of people that like history all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
But,
it's always chasing the next big thing in California.
Yeah, but buildings don't last more than 6 weeks here. They tear them down and start a new one.
That's true.
But what people don't know is that there is actually many, many gold rushes in California in the mountains from Oregon to Mexico. So there's different gold rushes in different areas.
Yeah, where people, like, they'll run through one strike and then they'll, you know, hear a rumor about the next one and go to there.
Exactly. You know, what happened is that prospectors would scour mountains and streams and they'd strike it rich. And, you know, they would use gold, you know, gold flakes through panning.
Mm-hmm.
Or they would, if they had some capital, they would find a vein and they'd dig a mine. And then people would stake all their claims and there would be nothing there. And as you said, they would then move north or move south to the next set of mountains
mm-hmm.
and try to find it there. Usually starting at the streams and working their way up to see where the gold's coming down from. One of these areas was the Cuyamaca Mountains that separated the Coachella Valley Salton Sea Basin, which is Palm Springs, Salton Sea Desert, from the San Diego area. And have you been there, the area?
Oh, yeah. I've been near the Salton Sea.
Okay.
It's creepy.
Yeah, I know.
Because it used to be that big
resort
area.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it got...
Another ghost town.
Yeah. It got too salty and all the fish died.
Who's the guy that made those interesting painting sculpture things that are still there?
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. This is really interesting. I have to check that out. Maybe we'll do that'd be interesting to do a series or an episode on just the ghost town of Salton Sea or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But in 1869, the Julian Gold Rush took off, sprouting more than 200 gold mines.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and like not that big an area.
Yeah. Now, this was the main employment of the area. This is where everybody came. There's so many of these ghost towns that we see today, like Bodie,
mm-hmm.
you know, is that that's why they existed, as you said. And they were the main employer, and these other businesses would pop up around to support that.
You've got a gambling hall. You've got
saloon.
A saloon. Usually the same thing.
Well, when we did Yreka, remember that was the stagecoach stop for Wells Fargo.
Mm-hmm. Because they have to get all that gold that's coming from all these claims back to somewhere with a big enough vault to hold it.
That's right. It wasn't a stagecoach for people. It was a stagecoach for money. And that back in
and
there,
that's why, if you don't know that, that's why Wells Fargo has a stagecoach as their symbol.
That's what they use. Yeah, they should maybe get a car.
And that's also where the phrase riding shotgun comes from.
Right, right. Yeah, and you guys, when you used to fight for the front seat of the car all the time.
We'd call shotgun.
Well, in 1870, Billy Reman had found gold and opened the Eagle Mine. About the same time, though, Alfred Smith had opened up his High Peak Mine. Now, these are very interesting because these mines are right next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a few problems in gold mining, which I learned on going through the Eagle Mine Company tour. It was a great tour. We had really a lot of fun. First of all, the first problem is you have to find a vein of gold.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing.
Yeah, just digging into a rock is not going to make you very rich. Even though they do have garnets, too. They find garnets there, too.
Oh, yeah, those are usually around with gold for some reason.
Now, the other problem is that you find a vein that produces more than the cost of extracting it.
Yeah, so you need to get something that's high enough in gold content right. in the rock to, you know, justify the cost of all that dynamite and time.
You know, I forgot the quantity they said on the tour, but what they would do is they would fill up something like, it's got to be more than just an ore car, but they would have a certain quantity of rock. You know, they find a vein, mm-hmm. and they just take, it's not like they would just like chip away. You always think like, oh, we're just going to chip away at the gold and take it out. That's not what
no,
they do.
No.
They blast out and take all this rock out, and then they run it through this mill press type thing. They had there at the mill still. They still had the presses, the big presses.
Oh, cool. The rock crushers.
Right. And they go through this whole thing, and of all this process, they abstract the gold. And then they say, okay, we have this certain quantity of ore, which is, I don't know, 2 tons, let's say, and we've gotten only 1/4 ounce of gold. That vein's not worth it.
Yeah.
So then they skip it and go to the next one. And that's how they do it. You know, it's not like, we're just, oh, look, there's a vein. Oh, where's my hammer and chisel?
You're not chipping out huge gold nuggets.
Yeah, right. That's yeah. For some reason, I came up, maybe it's because I've been watching too much Snow White or something with the 7 dwarfs. You know,
yeah,
little pigs.
They go in and get the already cut gems
yeah,
out
right.
of the wall.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's done in another country or something. Mm-hmm. They figured it all out. But
well, they are magical beings.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Another problem is that in the early days, the government regulations set the cost of gold. And in 1834, the United States fixed gold price was $20.67 an ounce, will remain that way until 1933.
That's such a long time. Yeah. Is that because we were on the gold standard?
It's exactly what it was.
Okay.
And I think, I can't think of there was a big lawsuit with that. I remember there's somebody like, you will not crucify us on a cross of gold or something like that. That was one of the I think Daniel Webster was.
Well, that makes sense because you used to be able on the gold standard go to a mint, right, and exchange your money for gold.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But the government didn't want to have to keep track of the ups and downs of the gold market.
Yeah, there wasn't any because they said it.
Oh, yeah.
And now other major countries were also on the gold standard in the 1870s. And the period, you know, this period, you know, from 1880 to 1914 was the classical gold standard. During that time, the majority of countries, you know, they had various degrees of gold in their standard, what they mm-hmm. had going. But they abandoned it in 1933, the gold standard. Mm-hmm. And they completely severed the link of gold between gold and dollar, the dollar in 1971, which is so cool because that means I was 14?
Yeah.
14 years old.
So before that, you could have gone with $20.67 and gotten an ounce of gold or whatever.
I know. And,
you dummy.
I know. Well, I blame it on my parents.
Yeah.
But the now, you know, gold's $1,500 an ounce or whatever, you know, and so it's amazing. So it started fluctuating. Now, the last problem is that as gold's price started to fluctuate, the mines would have to weigh the cost of running the operation to the cost of gold, what they're extracting. Mm-hmm. So when gold prices went down, they would shut and close up the operations. When gold prices got back up, they would rev it back up and go.
Wow.
You know, isn't that interesting? So the Eagle and High Peak mines ultimately were connected together. And I believe the tour that we take, you actually walk through both of them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did that happen on purpose?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was. Two dwarfs with picks just happened to hit each other.
Happened to go through.
Because we walked through the entrance in one place and went through a couple levels, mm-hmm. and we walked down the mountain on the other side.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was really cool. Now, the mines, you know, like I said, would open and close periodically. And then the owner passed away, and they basically just buried the entrances because they are dangerous. You know, they have shafts that go down 4 stories, you know, and you know, these people could die.
It's the same problem they have with quarries.
Exactly.
People are going and fall in, break a leg, can't get out.
But in 1960, the owner's daughter let Ed and Ellen Sprague, who are the grandparents of the current owners, mm-hmm. open the mine for educational tours. And so Ed and Ellen eventually purchased the mine, and they started tours in 1965. And then the son, Harlan Nelson, took it over. And then his sons, Paul and Craig Nelson, run the tours now. And that includes gold panning. You actually, as part of the thing, gold panning.
And you can still get gold out of
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we didn't stick around for that. You know, we did the tour. He said, okay, time for gold mining. But we were kind of in a rush.
Yeah.
We had to get back home.
You've done gold panning before. But yeah, we have. You took us to go gold panning.
Yeah, we did in Alaska. We did, I think, at different places, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they do a lot of different school classes. Fourth grade is a favorite that they have, you know, and bring into the Old West. You know, they have their challenges, you know, with weather. Weather's a big deal. What's really interesting is that all the equipment and most of the timber is original.
And still.
Yeah. And you know why? Because it's only 60 degrees in there and timber doesn't rot.
Oh, yeah. If there's not water and right. It's not wet. Yeah.
Right. And also what they told us is that when you walk in, you're walking slightly uphill. You know why?
Hmm. No.
Because you're pushing an empty cart going uphill, right?
Yeah.
But when your cart's full,
you want it to go downhill.
Downhill. Yeah. So that's the way they build all the rails. So they had these rails for the carts that roll on there, and they were all slightly at a grade.
How much of a grade are we talking? Like, not noticeable.
Not noticeable. It's not like you're climbing a rock, you know, but enough where it will get going.
You don't want it this steep. You don't want it too steep.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it's really cool. All the stuff we learned. The mine is 11 levels, and the tour touches 3 levels. And there was and so I guess 11 levels, there were like 5 below us. And but they didn't let us go down the shaft. They just showed us the shafts.
Yeah, that's probably smart.
Yeah, they had staircases. And the mine had thrived because of the passion that the Nelson family had passed through generation after generation.
If you want to learn more about the Eagle Mining Company, go to www.theeaglemining.com. You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com. Now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you about strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales.
Woo. And since we're talking about mining and moving a great deal of rock.
Yes. Uphill or downhill?
It's easier downhill. New Hampshire taxes you if you move dirt. Okay. Why would this be? Well, New Hampshire is known as the Granite State, so there's a lot of rocks, a lot of quarries, and gravel pits. And so because there's so much excavation, they tax excavation at a rate of 2 cents per cubic yard of earth excavated if you have more than 1,000 cubic yards are moved. So,
you know, you got to think about high-rise buildings.
Oh, yeah.
And they have to take out dirt. I mean, that's got to be more than 1,000 cubic yards.
Most know? Definitely. You know? It's primarily aimed at industrial extraction because, you know, 1,000 cubic yards is, you're not going to move that when you're replanting your garden.
Right, right.
But even if you're not a huge corporation, the tax is due if you move that much.
Right.
And it's due even if you're giving away the dirt.
Amazing.
So you can put up a free dirt sign and still owe them money.
So are you saying that if you are planning to move dirt,
mm-hmm.
you can take taxes for granted?
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry, everyone. Just turn it off. Now it's time for our travel tip, where we tell you what fun things you can do around the Julian area.
Julian has a lot of neat things to see. We talked about the apple stuff over there and, you know.
Pies,
the,
so many pies.
Kumaka. Yeah, pies is great stuff. But on the first Saturday of September, there's something very unique. The town celebrates harvest and the rich local wine industry and wine tasting by having a grape stomping event.
Like they do on I Love Lucy.
Like your great grandmother did in Italy.
Yeah, but I never saw a video of her doing
That's
it. I've
right.
seen Lucille Ball do it.
You saw where she used to stamp grapes, though, if you remember. It was a concrete bay, and it had a little spigot, had a little cross, a concrete cross over it, and that's where the juice would come out.
Oh, yeah.
I have pictures of it. If you don't remember, I'll show you. You were that young last time we were there.
Not last time, yeah.
So, hey, they have this. Remember, this is the first Saturday of September. Check out this Harvest Festival and go and get your feet purple.
Yeah. And plus they have food and kids' activities and, my favorite, bocce ball.
Yes.
I love me some bocce ball. Now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what steps you can take to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast. The first thing to think about is, do you have a historical passion that is passed down through generations? If so, you have to find a way to preserve it. And, you know, people can volunteer, but a great way to do it is if you can turn this historical passion into a business.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, tally up not only the startup costs, but the cost to maintain it. And that's one thing, you know, that I was talking about to the owners of this mine is that, you know, there are costs of maintaining this mine, but fortunately, they don't have to rebuild the timber.
No.
You know? No.
And they don't have to worry about, you know, cleaning up water or dusting the floors because it's part of the ambiance.
Right. Right. There it is.
The third thing to think about is don't look at your budget with rose-colored glasses. A lot of people have these assumptions going into businesses, no matter what the business is, and they think of the best-case scenario for their ongoing expenses. But the good thing to do is to get someone who's experienced, like an accountant, to help you figure these out beforehand, and because they're not you with your dream, they'll be a little more objective about it.
And last, see if there's some historical grants that are available from the government or nonprofits that could help offset some of the costs of maintenance. Eagle Mining Company actually has state grants, and they're also part of a registry of some sort. Mm-hmm. And so they're able to acquire a little bit of finances to help them keep some of the maintenance up of running it so that people can enjoy it from generation to generation.
And probably you can look at tourism boards, things like that, see if they have any startup grants as well. Now it's time to answer a question from one of our listeners. We've got an email today from Michelin who asks, what is a DBA and how do I establish one for my business?
So, Michelin, a DBA is doing business as, and normally it's sole proprietors who are doing business in something other than their legal name. And what that means, it would be like Brandon Norris doing business as
Super Fun Trampoline Store.
There it is.
Yeah. Even if I don't have a physical store.
That's right. Or it's super fun.
I didn't tell you.
What?
I'm going into the trampoline business.
Oh, good, 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 good. I think you'll be very good at that. In fact, they get your feet all conditioned for stomping grapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So one of the things you have to do is a fictitious business name announcement. Metropolitan News is one that I've used, but I think you use LegalZoom. I'm not sure. But what happens is when you complete the fictitious business name statement, they will file it in their paper and a copy to the county clerk. And so it says, Brandon Norris doing business as the super trampoline business.
Because you have to announce it to the world.
That's right.
So that, yeah.
Yeah, and so.
To prevent fraud, basically.
Right. So when you, why this is important is because when you go to open up a bank account under that name, they want to make sure that you are the person that owns this company in this name. And you're doing business as. And so you have to bring that with you as long as your federal ID number or your Social Security number to open up that bank account. So that DBA, doing business as, is very important in that regards. You could also have a DBA in corporations and different things like that. Mm-hmm. I've seen that happen a lot. Like, ABC company doing business as the hot cars.
Yeah.
Something like that. And so that's another thing that you would have to take the bank with you also. It's the same process.
That's all we have for this week. Tune in next week as we're going to leave Julian and head off across the state border into Arizona to the town or township of Glendale.
You know, I was in Glendale. I kept on hitting my map and say Glendale, and it kept on saying, yes, it's going to take you 9 hours. I mean, wait, it's like 2 blocks away. Glendale, California.
Glendale, California. Because you're more likely to go there because that's around where I live.
Right.
But we're going to Glendale, Arizona.
Right.
But till then, I'm Brandon.
And this is Rick, and thank you for letting us get into your business no matter where it is. Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music, composition, and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.